And so we're all here together at this retreat to cultivate mindfulness, to strengthen our capacity to be present. This was reflected in the opening circle. So I think everybody here has a sense or an understanding of something of the value of this practice. It would be hard to come to a retreat without having some sense of that. Although I do know a few people who managed to find their way to 10-day retreats never having meditated ever in their lives. But generally, when you come to a retreat like this, you have some sense of why you're doing it. And yet it can also be helpful to reflect and remember on why it's helpful. To reflect a little bit about the purpose of what we're doing. When the Buddha began his journey, it really was motivated around this question of suffering. So many of us do come to the practice through this doorway. Not all of us, but many of us come to the practice because there's some sense of, is there some way to live my life differently so that I'm not struggling and feeling battered by life? And this was the Buddha's exploration. He had that question, is it possible? Is it possible to be free from suffering, free from stress, free from dissatisfaction? The word suffering often has a very powerful connotation to us in our language. The word usually translated as suffering, dukkha, is much broader. Carries a range from the subtlest kind of unease to the deepest kinds of suffering that we experience as human beings. And in his journey, the Buddha's journey was about seeing if it's possible to be completely at ease in this life, not buffeted around, able to stand in the middle of life. And in his journey, he did discover that this practice of mindfulness is key. I mean, I'm so grateful to the Buddha for recognizing this very simple, ordinary quality of mind. It's a natural function. It's almost so ordinary that we might not even recognize it. This capacity to know what's happening while it's happening. That's the basis of what mindfulness is, just a very simple capacity of mind to know what's happening in the present moment as it's happening in the present moment. And the Buddha recognized through his own journey, through his own practice, oh, this actually is useful if it's cultivated in a particular way. This quality is so powerful and can help us understand our own minds, help us understand the suffering that we have, from the subtlest unease through the most profound suffering, can help us understand it. Not through intellectually thinking about, oh, this is why I'm suffering, but from the inside, we can understand what that suffering is about, and we can understand something of the reasons why it's here, the causes of the suffering, the causes of our unease, our distress, our dissatisfaction. And so the Buddha pointed to mindfulness being a very powerful tool for us. But mindfulness from a particular perspective. If we were to if we run up to somebody on the street and if somebody is angry and we ask them, do you know that you're angry? probably they'll say, well, yeah, duh. You know, it's like, of course I know I'm angry. And so that kind of just awareness that one knows one is angry or one knows one is reactive in some way isn't quite enough. Because often in our perspective, or at least for me before I really met this practice, when I was in some kind of reactivity, even if I knew I was in that reactivity, I was swept into that reactivity such that I believed that the reactivity in a way was the way out of the reactivity. That something about, for instance, being angry at somebody, and you know, it's like when we're angry, we're often focused outwards on the person or the thing we're angry at, and think that doing something about that is the answer. And there are times, and I'll talk about this more in a little bit too, there are definitely situations in our experience where anger is a very natural response and actually indicates that something needs to happen. You know, that it's a signal in a way, that sometimes our reactivity is a signal that something needs to happen, something needs to change. We often get angry about injustice in the world. And that anger is a signal that something needs to change, or that we perhaps need to take some action. And yet what we are often not recognizing is that the anger, that being caught by that anger, being in that space of that anger, is actually using up energy that could be used to move in the direction of compassionate response. And so this perspective of being caught in anger, being caught by reactivity, and believing or having the sense that the reactivity is, you know, believing the reactivity is the way towards solving a problem, that's a perspective that deserves some review, and that perhaps there's another perspective that's useful, another perspective that might support us to become more responsive in the world rather than reactive in the world, more skillfully responsive, responding from compassion and wisdom and kindness rather than hatred. So the new perspective, or perspective of mindfulness that we are exploring here, is beginning to recognize, to kind of turn towards our experience, turn towards our human experience, and begin to get to know it, to get to know it from the inside. And so when a reactivity arises, anger or frustration or confusion, we explore what does it mean to know the human experience of that. We recognize, rather than being focused on the thing that we're angry with or the thing that we're reactive to, rather than focusing on that, we turn and explore what is the experience of that reactivity itself. So this is kind of a simple shift to recognize what's happening in the present moment is an experience in the present moment. It sounds so simple. An experience in the present moment is an experience in the present moment. That's one perspective, a way we could say that we cultivate mindfulness or explore this perspective the Buddha offered us. It is not our usual perspective on experience. to just recognize, oh, this is what's happening in the present moment. This is what it means to be a human being that is frustrated, angry, confused, depressed, sad, happy. And this perspective around recognizing what's happening in the present moment is what's happening in the present moment is for everything that arises in our human experience. No part left out, as Pam was saying yesterday. All of us can be held in this perspective without rejection, without denial, without trying to hold on to it, without trying to fix it or change it or whatever our usual response to what's happening is. Instead, we explore this human, the humanity of this moment, the human experience. And so I'd like to spend some time today looking at some tools that support us in holding this perspective. Really practical tools for our practice. The first one is relaxation. This tool, when I first came to the practice, was not what I thought meditation was about. I thought I was supposed to try really hard to focus on my experience, probably stay with the breath for at least an hour so that I could get really concentrated, and then maybe something amazing would happen. And yet, through the years of my practice, and in particular through practicing with Sayadaw Utejaniya, I came to really appreciate the value of having a container, like starting the container of practice with relaxation, allowing relaxation to inform and infuse the entire way that we meet experience. And so starting with relaxation, relaxing the body. As we relax the body, it creates the conditions. Well, first of all, our body and mind are so tightly interwoven, so tightly coupled, that if there's any tightness in the mind, any tension in the mind, it's likely to be manifested by tension in the body. And as we explore relaxing the body, it also can have a rebound effect on the mind. And so as we relax the body, it can begin to support our mind to let go a little bit. And so we start with relaxing the body. Just relaxing the muscles of the body. Maybe even relaxing inside the body. Relaxing inside the throat. Relaxing the heart, the stomach, the intestines. We see there's a possibility actually to relax more than we might expect. And we explore this mindfully. We explore how does it impact my experience to relax. As we relax, we may begin to recognize that the mind softens a little bit. And so the starting with relaxation, we're already cultivating a kind of an attention to what's happening in this human being. What is the human experience of relaxing the body? So we're beginning that cultivation of mindfulness through exploring relaxation. Relaxing the body, relaxing the mind. So the relaxation begins to create a container in which we can explore what does it mean to be mindful? What is this mindfulness? This awareness, this presence, being aware. The simple definition of mindfulness, being aware of what's happening while it's happening. What's obvious for you in this moment? Body sensations? Hearing? Seeing? Feelings? Kind of relax. Relax and see if you can kind of tune into what is already here. What's most obvious in this moment? What's most obvious? This receptive kind of mindfulness. We're not looking for something here in this exploration that I'm taking you through right now. Relax. And what's obvious? What's the most obvious thing for you in this moment? It's more that you settle back. It's like you're a receiver, receiving experience. What's the first thing that comes into that receiver? This receptive kind of attention is a kind of mindfulness. When I first started practicing mindfulness meditation, I thought that in order to be mindful, I had to choose what I was paying attention to. So I kind of conflated the idea of directing the attention somewhere, often to the breath, choosing what I was going to be paying attention to. I thought that's what mindfulness meant. That's one kind of mindfulness. We can choose, like right now, I can suggest, for instance, that you notice the sensations of your hands. Notice the sensations of the contact of your feet, where your feet are contacting. Notice the contact of your hips. In a way, I'm directing the attention for you. And we can choose. We can choose to direct the attention to something. And we can cultivate mindfulness in that way. So we can choose to direct the attention to the breath. And yet, to think that it is only when I am choosing to direct the attention that that's the only time mindfulness is happening is a misunderstanding. So, for instance, if you are, I think this misunderstanding is one of the ways that we tend to get lost in thought, because often what happens when we're choosing something to pay attention to, so we're choosing to pay attention to the breath. We're noticing the breath. And, you know, while we're paying attention to the breath, something else happens in our experience. Maybe somebody sneezes or coughs, or there's a sound of a car driving by, or a bird sound, or some other body sensation is strong. And the attention is kind of pulled there. Only because we have this agenda to stay with the breath, it's almost like we don't notice that the attention has gone someplace else. And when we don't notice that the attention has gone someplace else, that's often where our mind wanders. Like when our mind wanders, usually it means we've missed that the attention has picked up on something. It hasn't been that I consciously decided, you know, I'm paying attention to the breath and there's a sound. It's like, oh, let me listen to that sound. The attention, kind of the process of attention, not me, not my choice, but something about that sound drew the attention, or that other experience drew the attention. And because we weren't kind of attuned to the possibility that we can follow the attention, as opposed to staying put with whatever we think we're supposed to be paying attention to. Our mindfulness goes out the door there. It gets lost. And so if we can begin to be curious about this receptive attention, kind of a blend of this receptive and directed attention, we might begin to recognize, okay, I'm paying attention to the breathing. And then recognize that the attention is leaving the breathing and going to a hearing, going to something else. When we notice that, we aren't losing mindfulness. Because mindfulness isn't about choosing what we're paying attention to, it's about being aware of what's already happening. So that that possibility of recognizing, oh, the attention has shifted to hearing. At that point, we have a choice. We can allow our mindfulness to continue to be cultivated with hearing for a little while, or we could choose to consciously decide, well, I am cultivating the attention on the breathing, so let me let go of the sound and come back to the breathing. So becoming aware of this, you know, this capacity of the mind to kind of direct the attention by itself below the level of our conscious awareness is a powerful support for us. And so this is getting familiar with a kind of a receptive awareness, a receptive attention. So we can either choose what to pay attention to, or we can settle back and simply notice what's obvious. In this moment, again, what's obvious? What's obvious? This is a kind of, this is mindfulness. We can allow essentially more of our energy to go into receiving and being with the experience of what is received. When we're directing the attention, more of our energy goes to pointing to staying with that experience. And so there's kind of a balance between these two. They're both useful in our practice, this directed attention and the receptive attention. They're both useful. In fact, they can kind of be blended, because we could kind of choose an area. Well, let's just an analogy right now. Think about how a radio works. There's a receiver in the radio. It receives the frequencies. It receives the transmissions that are just kind of floating out there in the air. You know, it's not that it's going out and searching for anything. It's a receiver. It's receiving. And then we tune. We pick a particular frequency to let the radio land on, and then it receives that frequency. So again, it's not going out to get it. It's just receiving. And so similarly, we can kind of choose a frequency. We might choose hearing, for example. Now, right now, let's just see if we can tune to hearing and then receive. So it's just receiving what's coming to us at the ear. Sounds in the room, subtle sounds. So settle back, relax. Let the attention be at the ear door. Noticing the sound of my voice. You know, how hard is it actually to hear me speak? Hearing sounds outside. Relax. The ear does the work. When we relax and kind of tune into that area, doesn't take a lot of effort to tune into that area. The receiving happens. So we can tune to one area of experience, such as hearing. Relax and take in the experience of hearing. Relax and receive. Kind of a difference in a way between hearing and listening, where listening is kind of a going out to pick something out of the field of hearing and put the attention there. But it's just more settled back and receiving the field of hearing, almost as if you were listening to music. And it's kind of quiet right now, so there's not a lot of it. But there's the subtle sounds in the distance. Quiet sounds in the room, maybe inner sounds. Relax and receive. You can also do this with the breath. And so now seeing if you can attune your attention to the breath. Maybe have the sense of receiving the breath, almost as if you were listening to it. So that it's not that you're trying to go out and find it, but more receiving what's available to be known in the breath. The stance of receptive attention. We can use it in this tuned way, or we can use it in the way I was exploring at the very beginning, just like what's obvious, kind of very broad, open attention. But in either case, this receptive stance is a much more kind of relaxed way to be with experience. We're not trying to find experience or create experience or look for experience. We're allowing experience to come to us and being curious about what that experience is. Relax. Receive. Maybe receiving in a particular attunement, receiving hearing, or receiving breathing, or receiving the body. So this comes back to, in a way, I'd like to talk about relaxation again. How can we have this attention, be attentive and relaxed at the same time? Relaxation and effort. The effort to stay connected to experience. We could say the effort to be present to receive experience. There's a little bit of effort necessary to be available to receive experience. It's different than the effort needed to go out and look for something. But there's a little bit of effort to be able to receive experience. So like right now, again, I'm going to suggest some particular areas for you to attend to. Notice the sensations of your hands. Receive the sensations of your feet. Receive the experience of hearing. Receive the sensations of the contact of your hips against the chair or cushion or bench. How much effort, how hard is it to connect with those experiences when I mention them. Usually it's not too difficult. Sometimes it's just as simple as I name an area. Notice the contact of your lips touching each other. And there, your attention is there. It's actually in a moment. Not very hard to be present. In a moment, the amount of effort it takes to meet our experience or to receive experience. I want to shift the language because meeting often seems to have that quality of like me going out and meeting. But I'm wanting to have this stance of receiving, settling back. As we settle back and allow our attention to receive these various areas, it's usually not much effort. It doesn't take a lot of effort to meet or be with or receive for just a moment. What is difficult, however, is doing that over time. In a moment, I can suggest that you be with your sensations of your feet. And for a moment, there it is. And almost immediately, perhaps, the attention can shift off of that. And so the exploration is around how is it possible to maintain or gently continue receiving experience. The key to this is a really gentle persistence. This is, I think, a lot of where we get tight in meditation practice, is trying to hold on, trying to exert the effort in our usual way. You know, when we want to do something hard, we like gather up our energy and we try to do it all at once. And that habit we bring into our meditation, it's like, okay, I'm going to sit for half an hour. Okay, let me get that energy going and I'm going to do this for half an hour. We try to create or construct the energy to stay present for the entire 30 or 45 minutes in the first moment of the sitting. And all that's called for, all that we have to do is meet this moment for a moment. And then remind ourselves to meet the next moment with just that light touch of effort. Receiving this moment and receiving this moment. Just enough effort to receive a second of experience. We can explore this with the breath. Right now, just let yourself attune to the breath and receive the breath. Just enough effort to be with an in-breath. That's all. All you have to do, know an in-breath. At the end of that in-breath, all you have to do is know an out-breath. Just enough effort, just enough connection to receive half a breath. And then the next half a breath. And then the next half a breath. Tuning our effort to that ease of being present. So initially, when we're practicing, it often takes, you know, we have to remind ourselves, you know, just reconnect. Just enough effort again and again, every second. All right, next moment. We can do this with the breath, just a half a breath. We can do it in the walking. I practiced this in the walking when I got very distracted. It's like, well, can I, I would pick some place on the ground, like, a foot and a half away. Can I be mindful until I get there? Yeah, I can do that. That's not too hard. A step or two. And then pick the next place on the ground. Can I be mindful till I get there? just kind of pull, it's like hand over hand, just a little bit of effort, just enough effort to get through a couple of steps. And as we practice in this light way, just very light touch of effort, a momentum of mindfulness begins to build. And then we recognize that little burst of connection of, oh, just enough effort to be present for this will carry us through an in and an out breath. Or will carry us through 5 feet of walking. And so we don't need to then remind ourselves quite as frequently. A kind of tuning our level of reminding ourselves, that light touch, that little burst of, oh, connect to experience, connect to this experience, tuning that to kind of the little wave of mindfulness that's present. There's an analogy I like to use for this. The kids these days, and some adults actually, I see too, riding on these little scooters, these kick scooters, not the motor scooters, but a little scooter that's got a bed and then a tall handle, and you have 1 foot on the bed, and then you use your foot on the ground to kick to get the scooter going. And initially, you have to, if you're at a stop, you have to kick a few times. You have to, you know, a little light touch, tap, 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 tap. That'll get the scooter going a little bit. It doesn't take like huge put your foot down and force press. It's just a tap, 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 light touch, and a momentum will get going, and you can ride for a little while. And then you start to notice the scooter getting wobbly, and so you tap again. It's kind of like that with the level of effort that we make. Just a light touch, just enough to be here for this moment, it begins to get a momentum of mindfulness, and then we start getting familiar with like riding that wave of mindfulness, and when we need to remind ourselves again. Just a little touch, a light touch of effort. On the scooter, if we're going along at a pretty good clip, just kind of riding, if we put our foot down, it actually gets in the way when we've got a good momentum going. And so it's kind of similar with the mindfulness too. When there's a good momentum going, we learn that reminding ourselves, like, you know, we're with an in-breath and an out-breath and an in-breath and an out-breath. And if we're reminding ourselves every half-breath, when the mindfulness is already there, it's kind of like we're getting in our own way. So we learn to tune our light touch of effort. So in these early days of practice, energy and effort are often, you know, we're settling in, and often the energy is either dull, sleepy, we go through a swamp of dullness, or we go through a lot of restless energy, kind of the edges of energy. And we need to explore what it might mean to be relaxed with those two. There's some tools that can help us. It's first of all, just know it's really, really normal to be either or both restless and sleepy. We can sometimes be restless and then falling asleep. So it's not that they're an either or. With restlessness, you know, I find it helpful to just, you know, step way back. Not so helpful to try to tune the attention at that point. Maybe just like think of the big container. Sometimes I like, okay, can this whole room hold this restless energy? Let the energy expand. that kind of sense of allowing the energy to expand, can let the mind settle and receive. Oh, this is what it's like to be restless. I'm probably not going to be able to flip a switch and turn the restlessness off. And so we can learn, how might it be possible to be okay with restlessness? And likewise with sleepiness. With sleepiness, sometimes it's helpful, depending on how sleepy you are, you know, to do some things. I saw some of you doing standing meditation earlier. That's a really useful tool if you're falling asleep a lot. Opening the eyes can be helpful. If you're really sleepy, looking at light, looking out the window can be very helpful. And we can also begin to recognize, you know, maybe standing and then not fighting the sleepiness, or opening the eyes and not fighting the dullness, but okay, this is the experience. Can it be okay to explore this human experience of dullness and sleepiness? What might it mean to allow restlessness? What might it mean to allow sleepiness, not giving in to it, but also not fighting it? This is exploring the human experience of sleepiness or dullness. It's actually possible. And actually, I'll give you a little carrot for this exploration, a little benefit or bonus. If you're not resisting sleepiness, I think a lot of us have experienced sleepiness as being really unpleasant when we're meditating, trying to stay awake, trying not to be sleepy. If instead you explore, okay, what is the human experience of sleepiness, and don't resist it, you'll find out it's really pleasant. It feels really good. You can be present for all of the sensations of the body kind of relaxing. I did this at one point when I finally recognized, okay, I'm not going to be able to stop the sleepiness, so I might as well try to be as mindful of it as I can. So I stopped resisting, and it's like, wow, this feels good. Okay. Oh, body feels really nice. It's like, oh, soft and gushy and heavy. And the mind starts going into these nice, like, waves of oscillating, pleasant experience. And so there, so with that experience, and then that woke me up. Okay, let me do it again. So I did that over and over again. Not fighting the sleepiness, but being willing. I mean, it's helpful if you're going to do this to be in a posture where you will wake up. You know, if you're against the chair like this and you just do this, that's not going to work too well. You know, and sometimes people can just fall asleep that way. But often if you're sitting up with this balance, you will kind of drop, and that will wake you up. So you can explore, okay, that woke me up. Let me just try again. And I did that over and over again during the period of a 45-minute sitting. And by the end of the sitting, I had been paying attention to sleepiness pretty much the entire sitting. And the only times I lost mindfulness were when I dropped. This is cultivating mindfulness. This is encouraging curiosity about what is the human experience of sleepiness. It's not a personal failing to be sleepy. It's a human thing. And we can begin to explore this experience. If you find yourself in trying to do that, just collapsed asleep for long stretches of time, then it's time to stand up. It's time to open your eyes. Maybe it's time to do walking meditation. But give yourself the chance to be curious about this human experience of sleepiness. So this brings me to this a third tool, really exploring, right, first the relaxing, receiving, And the third one is allowing. The third tool, allowing. Cultivating an allowing experience towards whatever is happening. This is bringing in that kindness that Pam was talking about. Allowing is a very kind perspective on experience. You know, I think in so many ways in our engagement in the world, we want to be seen. We want to be met. We want to be fully met by someone. In some ways, I think this is what our search for a partner or a love is about sometimes, is really wanting somebody to be able to see us, wanting that non-judgmental witnessing of who we are. All of our being, all of us. And yet, we struggle with doing this for ourselves, with allowing, recognizing, oh yeah, that judgment is there. That bias is there. And so this allowing perspective is beginning to be really honest with ourselves and to meet ourselves, fully meet ourselves. Seeing ourselves, actually witnessing ourselves. So this allowing attitude or perspective is an important part of the perspective of wise mindfulness. And yet, it is it's not something that we can just do. We find ourselves resisting our experience. We find ourselves wanting to hold on to our experience. We want to change it. We want to manipulate it. We want to get rid of it. And we have to learn what it means to allow that too. We can't just flip a switch in our minds. You know, we're experiencing something. We're experiencing something unpleasant. For example, a pain in our body somewhere. We're experiencing something unpleasant and resistance arises. We might tell ourselves, okay, I'm supposed to allow this unpleasant experience. Let me open to and allow this. But what's actually going on is that this unpleasant experience is happening and we don't like it. A bare container for allowing there is to recognize there's this unpleasant experience and not liking is happening. That's what's going on right now. Can the allowing perspective allow the not liking? It's very natural when something pleasant is happening to want to keep it, to hold on to it, to lean into it, to want it to stay. Clinging to it. Very natural, very human. And so it's like we're probably not going to be able to flip the switch and say, oh, don't cling to that. But what we can explore is, oh, that pleasant experience is happening and I want it to continue. Feeling into that. We feel into our resistances, our wantings, our frustrations, our angers, our confusions, with this allowing perspective, kind of like we make the container a little bigger, and we begin to recognize what is the experience, not only of the unpleasant or of the pleasant, but also of the resistance or of the wanting. This is where a lot of the learning happens in our practice. When we recognize, oh, this pleasant thing is happening and I want it. You know, you might explore something when you find, you know, something on the food line, you know, that maybe it's someday there'll be something desserty out there. I don't know whether that's going to happen on this retreat or not, but sometimes it does. And, you know, you might notice after you've gone to your spot, you know, if you are wanting a second thing, you know, a second to go back for seconds. And often in that wanting, we're focused more on the thing. And so we're not noticing that the wanting itself has a tension to it, a constriction to it, a kind of a feeling already of things not being okay. As soon as wanting springs up, there's already a feeling of offness in our experience. This is more obvious when there's something we don't like happening, something unpleasant, and we want to get rid of it. That the wanting to get rid of it is much more obviously unpleasant, the feeling of constriction, the hatred. And so we begin to recognize the suffering that's happening, the extra suffering that's happening in our system. We have something pleasant happening, and we've added something unpleasant, thinking somehow that that's going to make us happier in the future. It's so interesting the way our mind works that way. It's like we want something. So our mind goes out into the future, creates the idea that it'll be happier in the next even like 2 seconds if it gets that thing. And it's willing to sacrifice in this moment ease of mind by that wanting, because it thinks happiness is in the future. So that wanting is an extra kind of, it's an added phenomenon. And we begin to recognize, as we allow the wanting, or as we allow the not liking, we begin to recognize it both as extra, as unnecessary, and also as not leading towards well-being or ease. So the very stance of allowing these difficult states of mind when they're present is a way in which the mind begins to get new information, to learn in a new way that the habits of mind that we've been practicing for so long don't serve us that well. The habits of reactivity don't actually serve us. Our minds, you know, aversion has convinced us that getting rid of something is what's going to make us happy. Wanting has convinced us that having something is what's going to make us happy. And as we recognize that actually the aversion and the wanting themselves are adding suffering in this moment, and those fall away, we may begin to recognize, well, first of all, we begin to recognize there's a whole lot less suffering when we are just with the unpleasant, or just recognizing that the pleasant may not continue. It's just the experience passing through. It's much less constriction in our system. Sometimes I use this language, being with experience. Can we explore being with reactivity, being with wanting, being with anger, being with frustration, being with confusion? There's a vast difference between being with frustration and being frustrated. We can feel the difference between the two. We can recognize that one, the being with frustration, begins to support a learning about this experience of frustration itself. begins to help the mind understand how to navigate the world without that extra added reactivity. And so the component of allowing strengthens as we open to not allowing. It sounds like a paradox. How do we allow not allowing? How do we allow resistance, confusion? How do we allow wanting? How do we allow wanting to fix or change? But we can begin to explore it, the bigger container. So the capacity to allow strengthens as we open to not allowing. We open to those. And yet, really important to recognize that this allowing stance, on retreat, we are exploring allowing just with what's coming up, beginning to recognize I can actually open to this whole set of reactive emotions, can begin to understand something about that. So on retreat, we look at kind of turning towards that, learning to be with it. But in our lives, and somewhat in our practice too, in our meditation, in our sitting practice, we have to begin to recognize that allowing is not about agreeing or disagreeing with what's happening. It's not about saying it's right or wrong. It's not about saying it's good or bad. It's about acknowledging that what is happening is already happening. That what we are receiving in this moment is already here. Allowing means recognizing that what has come into being has come into being because of conditions from our past, our the world. There's so many conditions that come into play in what we're experiencing in this moment. And what is here is already here, and resisting that, resisting what is already here, is using up energy that might be able to be used to support us to respond more skillfully. Resistance to what's already here is futile. It's already here. It takes a lot of energy to resist what is already here. It drags us down. It binds the mind up. It boxes us in. It limits our perspective, resisting what is already here. And so we are exploring here on retreat, particularly opening to what is already here in this moment, and beginning to recognize that as we do that, as we lose the resistance to what is already here, we begin to recognize there's a lot of wisdom and a lot of capacity and a lot of compassion to respond skillfully. Allowing is not about passivity, especially in the world. The allowing perspective frees up all of that energy that was kind of bound up in the resistance and allows it to be directed towards skillful action in the world. And we can use this in our practice here. We can use it in terms of skillful action, in terms of meeting our experience. And so allowing here, you know, it's like when we think of allowing injustice in the world, it's like, no, that's not what I want to do. I do not want to allow injustice. But what we're talking about there is not resisting what is already here so that we can have more wisdom about responding to that injustice. In my experience, as the heart opens and allows what is here to be here, what is already here to be here, there is a movement towards responsiveness. the heart that is open, the heart that is unconstricted, doesn't just want to sit here. It wants to act. It wants to alleviate suffering. It wants to bring peace and ease and joy and happiness and non-suffering into the world. It wants to engage in that way. And so allowing, not to confuse allowing, which we're cultivating here and may feel somewhat passive here, but not to confuse that allowing with passivity, because it is not that. So the tools to explore in our days together. Some of the tools, we'll be offering others, but some that I find really supportive in my own practice. Relax. Receive. Letting the stance of mindfulness be about receptivity rather than going out and looking, a receiving experience. And exploring what it means to allow what is already here. Relax, receive, allow. Thank you for your attention.